Having a share in a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, brings a bounty of fresh, wholesome vegetables and fruits to your doorstep every week or every other week. Only problem is sometimes things show up that we have no idea what to do with. A chef this hour will share what to do with the wonderful, weird, and sometimes just overabundant things in our CSA boxes. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, August 14th. And this is Tell Joy What to Do with All the Produce in My CSA Box. And of course, there's summer produce is plentiful right now in our own backyard gardens and at the local farmers markets, as well as our CSA boxes. So what do you do with all this summer bounty? What do you do with all that summer squash? I have two big zucchini that came in my last CSA box. And I know how to make zucchini muffins. That's good, but you can only have so many zucchini muffins. So what else can I do with the zucchini that's in my refrigerator right now? How about garlic scapes? How about kohlrabi? Maybe you'd like to preserve some of this bounty for the fall and winter. How do you do that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Julia Shanks. She's a chef and co-author of The Farmer's Kitchen and principal of Julia Shanks Food Consulting, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's bountiful in your kitchen right now?
Oh, my goodness. Right now I've been up to my eyeballs in peaches and blueberries, which is actually a good thing. I've been going to the farmer's market every other day and just stocking up on everything wonderful and loading up my freezer so that in February when we're knee-deep in snow, I'll have some wonderful little treats to enjoy throughout the year.
That is something I'd like to talk about, but maybe a little bit later on, because it would be so nice to preserve this taste. And I'm not an expert by any means, but hopefully there's some somewhat easy ways to preserve some of this bounty that we... But it also is just wonderful to eat this stuff right now. And why is it so important, do you think, to eat seasonally and locally?
Well, seasonally and locally, two big things. First of all, when you eat locally, you're getting the produce when it's freshest because, you know, the stuff that's coming in from California, if you don't live in California, is picked when it's underripe and when it ships really well. So tomatoes just have, like, the teeniest blush of pink and, you know, the watermelons are still a little hard. And then when they get to you, then they ripen up and the texture isn't quite right and the flavor isn't quite right. But when you're buying it locally, it's usually picked that morning or maybe the day before. So it's just bursting with flavor and it's fresh and it's absolutely ripe and delicious.
Yeah. So I know that you work with a lot of small farmers. What challenges do farmers face in bringing a well-rounded crop of vegetables to their shareholders or markets each week?
Well, I think, truthfully, one of the biggest challenges is not so much during the season, but at the beginning of the season, in February, March, and April, when they're gearing up and they're starting to plant everything and they're buying their seeds and they're preparing their soils. And that's when they're really struggling, and they struggle financially because they got all this upfront cost, and they don't necessarily have the revenue coming in. So that's one of the big things about the CSA model, is that the customers are prepaying, and they're paying for the produce in the summer. They're paying for it in January and February and March. So they're really helping the farmers get a leg up on the season and stay ahead of their cash flow so that they can focus on growing and harvesting during the season and bringing you the freshest, beautiful crops.
Yeah, we did a show on community-supported agriculture much earlier in the year, and I did, for the first time, sign up for a share, and I'm now getting... It's just my husband and...
So you said you got too much zucchini.
Yeah, I did. But no, not really. It's just that I just don't know. You know, it's just my husband and me, and it's...
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff to deal with there, and I love vegetables. I love them, but... I also don't have tons of time to make several meals a day out of them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And but so the zucchini. Yeah, I guess that was one that I make a chocolate zucchini muffin because why not?
Yes, because chocolate makes everything better.
Yes.
Yeah.
But,
well, actually,
I saw
on your Facebook page you had some really great suggestions. I think a couple of people suggested zucchini fries. Breaded and then fried, and maybe even put a little bit of Parmesan cheese in the breading, so when you fry it, it just has a little cheesy, earthy flavor to it. You can grill it. You can also hollow out the seeds, because the seeds actually aren't really that flavorful. The flavor is in the skin. And if you hollow out the seeds and you have a nice channel, you can stuff it. You could stuff it with ground beef and tomatoes and pine nuts. You could stuff it with rice and cheese and corn. You can make nice little fillings and use the zucchini just as a vessel to hold some other really delicious things, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, like what?
Well, just, you know, the rice stuffings or bread stuffings or meat stuffings, sausages.
Yeah, here's some of the zucchini ideas. Laurel, sauté with some fresh garlic and olive oil.
Yeah. Well, can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, that's easy, and I can do that.
Yep.
Jim says, try grilling them. Slice them lengthwise, approximately 1/8 inch and 1/4 inch thick, and then brush it with olive oil, Italian seasoning, and Parmesan. Sounds pretty good.
The other thing is that if you cook them just al dente, you know, sometimes when you cook zucchini, they can stay quite firm, and then the longer you cook them, they get softer. So if you cook them just until they turn bright green, then you can freeze them, and then the freezing, you know, kind of will change the texture a little bit so it feels more cooked. And then in the wintertime, you can then take them out, and when you want some fresh vegetables, you'll have the zucchini then, and they're actually practically ready to go. They just need to be heated up.
Yeah, now there some mentioned really some interesting ideas. Someone says they put them on pizza. That sounds all right. Put it in muffins. Yeah, that's good.
Oh, and pasta. Somebody suggested cutting it like pasta.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? It sort of reminds me a little bit of not exactly, but spaghetti squash. You use it instead of the pasta and put spaghetti sauce on top of it.
Exactly. I mean, the thing about using zucchini as a pasta is that you need to slice it very thin to, you know, mimic the shape of linguine or pappardelle. So you can use a vegetable peeler to do that. I know some people have, you know, for example, like the apple core machines that sort of cut the spirals. So, you know, they do make special machines for that. But if you don't have the equipment, you can just use a vegetable peeler and then just use it to cut long strips of zucchini and then toss it like pasta.
Well, here's
pesto.
Kim in Eau Claire has a zucchini lasagna idea. Hi, Kim.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I have a slicer that I can slice it really, really thin and replace the noodles in lasagna, and there was an all-vegetarian recipe that we tried that actually turned out pretty good.
That sounds especially great because it's gluten-free, and a lot of people are going gluten-free, so to have that substitute of the zucchini instead of the pasta is also really nice. I like that.
And what is this name you call it, Kim?
Zucchini zanya.
Oh, okay. That's good enough. Yeah, so it's a typical veggie lasagna recipe, but you use thinly sliced zucchini instead of the lasagna pasta.
Correct.
Yeah, sounds really good. Thank you very much. Apparently some people call this zoodles instead of noodles, they're zoodles.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, a few weeks ago, I put a picture of my garlic scapes on my Facebook page. and you just,
aren't they beautiful?
They are beautiful. But I said, so what should I do with these? And I said, and plus I think I had zucchini at the same time. And they said, saute that zucchini up in those garlic scapes.
You know, yeah, so. They have a wonderful texture that's reminiscent of asparagus, just sort of that grassy earthiness and crunch. But they taste like garlic. And what I actually really like about the garlic scapes is that they taste like garlic, but they don't have that lingering after effect. So you don't have to worry about talking to people after you eat the garlic scapes.
Yeah, that's good. That is good. Let me take Jill and Rhinelander with another zucchini idea before we check news and maybe talk about some other things. Hi, Jill.
Hi, good morning. I have a way to use zucchini, and it depends on how much you've got, and I just kind of wing it. But you shred the zucchini. If it's big, you peel it and seed it. If it's smaller, you can just shred the whole works. But shred it and mix salt with it. Put it in a colander with a weight on it to get out a lot of the moisture. Then let that sit for a couple hours. Then what I do is rinse it to get rid of the salt, or some of the salt anyway. Squeeze it to eliminate more of the moisture. Put it in a bowl with mix in Italian seasoning, however much you want, dried minced garlic, and if you have the dehydrated onion flakes, put that in. That helps absorb some of the moisture.
And because we're almost at news, Jill, what are we making with this mixture?
I call them zucchini pancakes.
Oh.
You mix egg with it.
Yeah.
So hold it together.
And then you pop it in like a pancake.
Sauté it in olive oil.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you for that idea. We'll talk about some other ideas for zucchini or other produce that we are getting in our CSA boxes or farmers markets after this news. What's about Claire?
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground.
This is Tell Joy What to Do with Her Garden Bounty, with her CSA share, maybe all the produce that we get at our local farmers markets. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are asking you for your ideas on how you use the produce in your CSA share or the farmer's market. What do you do with all of the summer squash that we have? How about the garlic scapes? How about kohlrabi? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Julia Shanks, chef and co-author of The Farmer's Kitchen and principal of Julia Shanks Food Consulting, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I think we got enough ideas now for zucchini, but let's get back to the garlic scapes. Kevin on Facebook asks, are garlic scapes totally useless?
Absolutely not. Oh, my goodness. You know, if you're unsure what to do with them, at the very least, you can just use them like you would regular garlic. You know, I'll saute kale with garlic scapes, a little bit of olive oil in the pan, and then the garlic scapes chopped up fine. You can make them into a pesto. You can saute them just as a vegetable if you want. Just for a real strong garlic flavor, nice crispy texture. So not at all useless. Delicious.
Yeah. Why is it, and I know that this varies from CSA to CSA, but some people will say, how come I'm getting this really oddball thing in my CSA box? Why do you suppose there's so many unusual items?
One of the reasons is just what grows well for mm-hmm. the farmer, what's good for the soil. And, you know, obviously we want to have diversity because we can't just send out, you know, boxes full of tomatoes every week. You know, you need the variety and what grows well in their soil and their climate. And it's also really fun to experiment. I think sometimes we just get into a rut and we go to the farmer's market or the grocery store and we pick up the same five vegetables.
Yep.
And it's fun to be forced into this experimentation to, like, what do I do with kohlrabi? What is this behemoth, funky-looking thing?
Right. Well, we have Sarah on Facebook who says that once I made garlic scapes into a totally flavorless pesto. Another year I blanched them and I treated them like green beans in a stir fry. So apparently she liked that way. But so is there some secret to making a garlic scape pesto that's good?
I would guess that, you know, a little bit more Parmesan cheese, a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of salt, a little lemon juice. I think, you know, it still needs all the flavor enhancements. You know, the garlic scape flavor is delicious, but it just needs to be brightened up with the olive oil, the cheese, and the salt, and the lemon juice just to enhance it.
Yeah, and another listener on Facebook says that she uses, or he uses, the garlic scapes in pesto, stir fries, mm-hmm. grilled yep. in soups. They are delicious. So,
so lots of uses. I like throwing them on the grill too. A nice little char mark on them.
You know, you shared nice with us, and we thank you very much for a couple of recipes that we can we can use when we are trying to use up some of our yummies. And one of them was a pesto recipe. I'm looking for it now. It was a traditional basil pesto, I think.
Yeah, well, basil or arugula. Mm-hmm. You know, you can really use anything green in your pesto. So you'll get the flavor of the green, whether it's the scapes or the arugula or the basil, but you also get the flavor of the cheese and the nuts, the richness of the nuts and the olive oil. This recipe is actually from my co-author, and he puts a little bit of white wine in his pesto, which, you know, gives a little brightness, a little fruitiness from the wine, which is nice as well.
Yum, yum. I have to have a shout out to my my farm. My CSA farm, Vermont Valley, has I wasn't able to do it, but they have their members come out to the farm if they'd like to, and they had pesto days just a while back where you could pick basil and make your own pesto at the farm.
Yeah, a lot of people make pesto in advance, and they'll put it in ice cube trays. So, you know, in the summertime when you're overwhelmed with pesto, you can make a big batch, throw it in an ice cube tray, and freeze it. And one of the things that I do is that once it's frozen in the ice cube tray, I'll pop it out and put it in a Ziploc bag just so it takes up less space in the freezer than keeping it in the tray.
Oh, yeah, and there's a nice way to save that taste for the winter months.
Yeah, and truthfully, I also just freeze a basil plain. You know, pesto definitely has a distinctive flavor profile, and, you know, with the olive oil and the garlic and the nuts and the cheese, and, you know, very Italian, which obviously is delicious. But sometimes you want to go a little bit different. Maybe you want to take a French slant. Actually, a lot of the Asian curries are really nice with a little bit of fresh basil at the end. So what I'll do is I wash the basil, dry it on paper towels, and then when it's dry, I throw it in a bag, Ziploc bag, into the freezer. And then when the basil freezes, it just crumbles up, and, you know, then you can just grab a couple of pinches, and it's like dried basil, but it's fresh basil. So when you throw it in a sauce or in a stir fry, you know, sometime in November or January or March, you know, you have that bright, fresh summer flavor of basil in your dishes, and it's lovely.
And I know that you put your basil also in a tomato soup, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Julia Shanks. She is a chef and co-author of The Farmer's Kitchen, and she is here helping us with some ideas on what to do with all of the summer bounty that's out there right now, maybe some of the overabundance of things that we might have in our CSA boxes. What do you do with, what are some of your favorite, maybe favorite unusual vegetables or favorite vegetables? What are you working with these days? What are you gorging on these days? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Josh in Beloit is with us now. Hi, Josh.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, so one thing that our CSA set up, which worked really well, was they created a Facebook page, and then every week or 2 weeks before they would we would pick up our vegetables, they would let everybody know approximately how many vegetables they were going to get of what type, and they allowed people to recipe share, as well as, you know, the growers themselves had some of their favorite recipes, and it just worked out really well. So something I'd encourage either CSA growers to do or participants in CSAs.
Yeah, it's so helpful to know what you have in advance because, you know, once you pick up the box, it's a mad dash to use up everything while it's still fresh. And if you have a few days' notice, you can do a little research, find some recipes, you know, call friends, what are you making with this? And it's a lot easier. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, thank you very much, Josh, for that. Yes, my CSA also has recipes each week, you know, saying, hey, you're going to get a lot of this. You might want to try that, you know.
And, so, yeah.
and one of them, and, you know, I really have been, even though I'm a big vegetable fan, I'm a vegetarian. There's a lot of things I didn't really know a lot about, like wilted greens. I just never really did that very much. And what a great way to use your greens.
Yeah, greens is one of the things that, you know, we joke about in New England that, you know, every week it's another bunch of Swiss chard and kale, and, you know, if you get another bunch, I don't know what I'm going to do. But actually, they're really versatile, and truthfully, all the abundance of greens was the inspiration for this book, is, you know, because it's always that question, what do I do? So one thing that you can do is you can make dumplings out of the greens. So if you wilt them, you can puree them and then mix them either with a little flour and cheese and a little bit of egg to bind them. You can make dumplings out of them. You can put them in soups with, you know, white beans and sausage or and broth or pastas. They're wonderful wilted in soups. Sometimes I'll wilt them with a little bit of curry powder and raisins and pine nuts, and I'll use them as a stuffing either with chicken, you know, put it under the skin of chicken and roast it that way, or you can use wilted greens as a filling for raviolis.
Oh, does that sound good? And you gave us a recipe for chickpea crepes that are stuffed with wilted greens, and that is...
Yeah, and actually that's a wonderful vegetarian dish. The crepe is made with chickpea flour, and nowadays they're just carrying it at the regular supermarket, but... You know, that you can also find them at, you know, the ethnic markets, either like an Indian market. But you make the batter with chickpea flour, which is high in protein, and a little bit of flour and egg, and you cook the pancake thin, you know, thicker than a crepe, but, you know, not as thick as the traditional American pancake. And then you fill it with the wilted greens, and it's a lovely entree with a salad or with a sauce made with roasted red peppers.
It just sounds delicious. And we did post the recipe for the chickpea crepes stuffed with wilted greens on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And I promised that we'd also talk a little bit about the tomato soup recipe that you shared with us. You know, tomatoes, those are things I can eat like apples.
I know. You know, it's one of those things that you think that you don't really need a recipe for tomatoes, but sometimes around September, it becomes a little bit overwhelming. But, you know, soup is so wonderful. And, you know, soup is actually just a great way to use up a lot of different vegetables, just a different flavor. It's creamy and rich and comforting. So tomato soup is, you know, really simple. You saute some onions and garlic with a little bit of butter. You add the tomatoes and maybe a little bit of white wine just to give it some balance with the acidity. And then you puree it with some salt and pepper. You can strain the soup, and it makes it nice and creamy and velvety, even if there isn't any cream. Although my co-author, Brett, would probably shoot me if I said to strain the soup, because he thinks all the seeds and skin, all those things is good for you and lots of nutrition. And don't get rid of that. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
But I like the creamy texture of the soup, so I do strain mine. And also, one of the things I like to do, which you could also make into a soup, is just roasting the tomatoes in the oven. It's actually a really easy way to make what feels like a slow-simmered sauce, but is really quite quick, is you cut your tomatoes in half and toss them in a bowl with some olive oil, whole cloves of garlic, big chunks of onions, maybe some fresh herbs like some thyme. I like thyme, or if you want to do a little rosemary. And you toss it in the oven at 400 degrees for like 20 or 30 minutes, just until it gets golden brown and the garlic is nice and roasted and the onions are soft. And then you put the whole thing in the blender, and you've got tomato sauce.
Oh, sure.
You don't have to worry about standing over the stove and stirring it and letting it simmer for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And
which, you know, I can't do, yeah. But that is great. And so how many, I'm just curious, if I want to make a batch of this tomato soup, about how many tomatoes am I needing for that?
I would say, you know, about a quart of tomatoes. You know, every farmer's market sells it different, so about a quart or 2 pounds of tomatoes.
Okay. We are talking about what to do with the wonderful, sometimes overabundant things that we find each week in our community-supported agriculture boxes, and or what we have growing in our own backyard, or what we pick up at the local farmers market. What do you do with all of your summer produce? What are you liking right now? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So we've talked a lot about zucchini. We talked about the garlic scapes. We talked about tomatoes and different greens. What's the most befuddling vegetable that's shown up in your weekly share? Do you have suggestions of what to do with a particular type of produce? We welcome your suggestions and we welcome your questions for our guest, Julia Shanks, who is a chef and co-author of The Farmer's Kitchen, principal of Julia Shanks Food Consulting, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So I chopped up the last kohlrabi I got, and I just kind of ate it raw. What else can I do with that?
Did you like it raw, or was it a little?
It was all right. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was okay, but I don't think I'd want to eat it, you know, every day like that.
Yeah. Well, kohlrabi is in the same family as broccoli, in the brassica family, and some people say it tastes like broccoli stems.
Yeah.
So when I think about cooking kohlrabi, I think, you know, what do I do with broccoli? So one of the things you could do is make a coleslaw with the kohlrabi and apples and a little bit of mayonnaise and some fresh herbs like parsley and tarragon. So you could certainly make it into a slaw. I've actually just thrown it in the oven and roasted it with a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper. I put bacon on. I know you're vegetarian, so you probably don't want to do that. But just roast it in the oven. It's actually really lovely. And the nice thing about kohlrabi is that it's very juicy. It's not, you know, like you think about potatoes and they're kind of starchy and, mm-hmm. you know, they sort of, they're dry, and kohlrabi is nice and juicy and refreshing, and it has a very light feeling, even though it's very satisfying.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good. And when you said slaw, that reminded me of this huge head of cabbage that I got.
Yeah.
I can make slaw too, but anything else with that huge cabbage?
You know, it's funny because I had an extra head of cabbage once, and I had a leftover bottle of sparkling apple cider in my refrigerator from a party. And I ended up just sautéing the cabbage with the apple cider, or with the sparkling cider.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be delicious, you know, just a braised cabbage, which was terrific. And when it comes to coleslaw, there's actually so many different kinds. I've actually been putting a little bit of chipotle pepper, so you have that smoky, spicy flavor in the cabbage, so you can do that as well.
Good idea, yeah. And how long does, and my husband was ready to throw out that half a head of cabbage that I still have, and I said, no, cabbage lasts for like a year, doesn't it? How long does it last?
Yeah, not quite a year, but pretty close, pretty close. And if you wrap it well, it lasts for quite a long time. You know, if you find that it's oxidizing around the edges, certainly you can just chop off the edges, but it will keep fine in your crisper drawer for several weeks.
You know what I have in my freezer right now from earlier CSA boxes I learned this from the note that came with the box.
Mm-hmm.
I have a whole bunch of chives just in there.
Yeah.
And I guess I can just snip off as I need them.
Yep. And that, you know, it's the same thing with the basil, where I just throw it in the freezer, and then as I need some, I just, you know, pull a pinch out of the freezer, and, you know, once they're frozen, they crumple up, so it makes it really easy just to grab a pinch and add them. And chives have such a lovely oniony flavor, just soft onion flavor. It's really lovely.
Yeah, and I also have in there chopped up rhubarb. And 'cause they said if I just chopped it up and froze it, that I could, you know, I could use it later. And I guess I can put that into the strawberry rhubarb muffin that I made the first time. But is there another idea?
You know, it's funny. When we were researching recipes for rhubarb for the book, one of the things I came across was a savory dish where you make a lamb stew with rhubarb and mint and some coriander and saffron. And that was a revelation. It was so delicious. And, you know, the rhubarb, it has the sweetness, but also has the tart, and in a stew, it was really lovely.
Well, when we come back after news, we will talk about beets. We have a listener who wants to know what to do with her beets. So do I. I roasted some the last time, and that's good. But we'll see if our guest Julia Shanks has some other ideas or tips to make them the best they can be. Julia is a chef and co-author of The Farmer's Kitchen, principal of Julia Shanks Food Consulting, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So what questions do you have? What recommendations do you have? What do you do with all of your summer bounty, the produce at the farmer's market in your CSA box or in your own backyard garden? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Sun and rain, find my way in nature's chain to my body.
Auburndale, New Auburn, Berlin, New Berlin, London, New London, Rome, the other Rome, Franklin, the other Franklin, New Franklin, Richmond, New Richmond, Ridgewood, Woodruff, Woodford, Pleasantville, Pleasant Prairie, Sun Prairie, Stein Prairie, Prairie Sheep, Prairie Sack, Black Flambeau, Burnett, I've been over there, hey, smell that dairy.
This is Tell Joy What to Do with her CSA share, with all the fruits and veggies that we get in our community-supported agriculture boxes each week. And for that matter, all of the produce that's so plentiful right now in our gardens or in our local farmers markets. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest chef, co-author of The Farmer's Kitchen, about what we can do with our with the bounty of summer fruits and veggies, what we can do with them right now, and we'll talk some about preserving them for the fall and winter months as well. Julia Shanks is our guest. She is principal of Julia Shanks Food Consulting, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So Dana on Facebook says, what about beets, Julia?
Beets are delightful. I think they get a bad rap just from, you know, olden days when we only got them in cans, mm-hmm. and they just had a mushy, icky flavor. But they're really lovely. They're sweet. They have a nice little earthy flavor. But before we talk about beets, one thing I want to talk about that I think overwhelms people is the red staining in your hands and on your cutting board, that people may be just scared to deal with them in general because they don't want to stain everything. So I wanted to just share my little trick for dealing with that, and that's to wash your hands and your cutting boards with baking soda and cold water, and that just pulls the stains right out. So I don't really worry about, you know, getting it all over my hands or my cutting boards, because I know that after I finish cooking with the beets, I can just wash my hands with the baking soda, and that'll get rid of all the stains.
Good to know, because, yeah, I walked around with pink fingers for a while.
Yes. So beets. You can eat them raw, but I prefer them cooked. And what I usually do is I just cook them first, and then I do whatever I want to do. So when I get the beets, I cut off the tops. And the tops you can cook just like you would Swiss chard or kale. You can saute them with garlic, serve them as a side vegetable. And then the roots, I'll wash them, toss them with a little bit of olive oil and salt, and just throw them in the oven. And, you know, I don't even pay attention, 375, you know, for 45 minutes, half an hour, until they get shriveled up and really dark. And once they're cooked, then they're really easy to peel. And that's actually one of the signs that the beets, in fact, are cooked, is that they are easy to peel. So when you take them out of the oven, you can let them cool, and you have your roasted beets, and then, you know, you have a playground of all sorts of things that you can do.
Before we get to that, let me just ask, because I understand they're supposed to be easier to peel, but how what's the easiest way to peel them? Do I still need the knife and cut around them, or can I just, aren't I supposed to be able to just kind of
pop them out?
Yeah, pop them out.
Once they're cooked, the skin, you can just, you know, use your fingers to just rub it off. Or if you have a knife, you can peel them off. When they're raw and the skin, you know, really.
Oh, no, we lost our guest, so we'll have to call her back, because we still have 5 more minutes to talk about what to do with our summer produce. Let me know when we have her back. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Okay, maybe we didn't lose you, but we lost you momentarily, at least what you were saying. So,
I'm here. Yep.
Yes. In any case, Julia, you were saying that once we peel our beets, then what can we do with them?
Lots of things. One thing you can do is You can mix them with yogurt. You know, you can cut them up or grate them and mix them with a little bit of yogurt and mint, sort of a variation on raita, which is a nice condiment, or even just a salad. One of the things I love, too, is if you cut them up and saute them with olive oil and coriander and cumin and black pepper, and it's a wonderful Moroccan spice, and you can put mint on that afterwards as well. Beets also pair really well with goat cheese, so you could do a salad with the cooked beets and goat cheese and either red wine or balsamic vinaigrette, maybe put them over greens.
Yeah. We have an email from Megan who says you can make borscht, the beet soup, with the extra beets and the cabbage, she says. Different kinds and ways to make it, but it's a tasty way to use both of those. So, good. Thanks, Megan. You know, I want to talk a little bit about saving some of these wonderful tastes for the fall and winter months. We talked about some of them, herbs and some other things. How do I preserve those tomatoes?
Oh, well, tomatoes, so many different options. And truthfully, I'm actually going to head to the farmer's market this weekend and pick up about 25 pounds. Mm. And one of the things that I'm going to do is I'm going to make my own ketchup. Mm. So you can take the tomatoes and cook them with onions and garlic and some vinegar.
Yeah, so that's going to happen to us. We're gonna kind of lose her, and then we're going to check to see if she's there, and hopefully she is. Sometimes we have a little telephone gremlin that will do that. So I guess we did lose her. You know what? I don't know if it's going to be worth getting her back. So thank you, Julia Shanks, chef and co-author of The Farmer's Kitchen, principal of Julia Shanks Food Consulting, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We do have a number of her recipes that are posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So we thank her for giving us the recipes for a tomato soup, for a pesto, a basil or arugula pesto to put in that tomato soup or to use in other ways. She also has a recipe for chickpea crepes stuffed with wilted greens and a sauce, another Romanesco sauce that can be used for dipping vegetables in, or it can be alongside entrees. So check those out, and thank you for all of your suggestions. A lot of people had a lot of great suggestions, too, for how to use zucchini. So if you need ideas for your zucchini, check out the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And thanks for all of your ideas. We have other suggestions coming in. Liz on Facebook says, best thing is if you have too much zucchini, prepare in the shape you will desire in the future, shredded or diced or sliced, blanch, pat dry, and freeze. Thaw when you are ready to use it, and voila, fresh zucchini all year. Well, that's great. We can even preserve our zucchini. Thank you very much, Liz. Marcia emails, my hubby and I love kohlrabi steamed with a dab of fresh Wisconsin butter. He adds salt and pepper, but I sprinkle on fresh dill weed, and we enjoy it raw as a crudité with a green goddess or onion dip. I plan to make it as a slaw. What a great idea. Well, thanks, everybody. This is great. We can continue sharing ideas on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It is time now for Wisconsin Life. A small farm in northeastern Wisconsin is helping to preserve an important aspect of the Oneida tribe's culture. Besides providing organic produce, the farm grows white corn, beans, and squash in what's called a Three Sisters Garden. Patty Murray went to visit with the farm's director.
Jeff Matoxin directs the Junhequa farm in Hobart, just west of Green Bay.
I'm saying Junhequa. When we share that with people, a phonetic spelling is J-O-O-N, June, H-E-Y, hey, and then Q-W-A, Junhequa. A loose translation in the Oneida language is life sustenance.
It's an 80-acre spread that includes pastures for grass-fed beef and your garden variety vegetables like tomatoes and cucumbers. Those are used to make salsa and pickles that are sold at local stores. The star of the show is traditional white corn.
It's a heirloom corn, primarily used with our bread and our flours, our soup, a number of variety of products, well over 10
Harvesting the corn and breeding the cobs is a hands-on process.
We do a hand harvest, and that event's called a harvest and husking bee. Usually takes about a week long. We invite everyone and anyone in the community to participate. We go through the steps of hand harvesting the corn. We'll talk about how to traditionally dry the corn, braiding it.
Then comes the tricky part, drying it.
I'm just going to step in here and I'll turn this fan off. I thought it was really long.
Matoxin steps into the crucial drying building on the Junhequa grounds.
The hooks that are up on top on the rafters is where we can put the braids up. So that's a traditional practice. So the hands-on process and traditions we want to make sure is kept alive and is part of our community. So we show them all these steps, but also we are using what's provided today. So technology, we do use a corn picker. It's not a combine system. It only picks the corn off the field from the stalk. It generally will husk for you, but we've got to dry it down. If we don't make sure we follow up on that properly, we can lose that crop because mold can spread so fast, a lot of pests and insects.
Matoxin says the purpose of the corn goes beyond human consumption. It's one of the three sisters alongside beans and squash.
The corn itself, it's one of our three sisters. Many of the tribal nations have corn, beans, and squash as that garden. And those varieties are so varied. So for the Oneida tribe, we have corn, beans, and squash as well of the three sisters. And what we always looked at as our food is that it's part of us. It's part of our responsibility. The three sisters and the corn itself is part of our creation story. We look at it as our relatives.
Junhequa doesn't aim to feed the tribe or even make much of a profit, though Matoxin says that would be nice. Instead, it's an educational model.
It's a never-ending learning process. We struggle with our mistakes, my problems, my issues, but then it's important to share that so that you can help someone when they look at, they don't have to grow an acre. They can grow so much from a potted plant or from small box gardens, raised bed gardens.
Junhequa's crop of traditional white corn will be ready for harvest in October.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. You can find more online at wisconsinlife.org. Thanks to Marika Saval, to Christy Taylor, and to Elizabeth Deliquest for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Inch by inch, row by row. Gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down. Stones, man is made of dreams and goals. Feel the need to grow my own, cause the time is close at hand. Grain for grain, sun and rain, find my way in nature's chain. Tune my body and my